Just want to say thank you to Nala for inviting me to give this talk today. Okay. And so today what I'm going to talk to you about is the tropical fruit and nut collection in Hilo, Hawaii. This is a part of the USDA National Plant Germplasm Repository. Okay, so just to give you a little bit of background, we're one of three tropical fruit repositories in the United States. So here we are located in Hilo, and our other two repositories are in Miami and Puerto Rico. And as you know from recent events, the reason why we have all these strategically located is due to natural disasters such as hurricanes. So we are a part of the Daniel K. Inouye Pacific Basin Agricultural Research Center, and so we have two facilities. Some people who came to visit us actually got to see both yesterday. And so our main laboratory facility is located in Hilo, and our repository is located in Steinbach, which is part of the University of Hawaii at Manoa College of Tropical Ag and Human Resources Waikia Research Station. So we occupy about 33 acres on the station land. So just to give you a little bit of background, in 1986, there was a joint cooperative project between the University of Hawaii, CTAR, and the USDA National Plant Germplasm System. And then in 1989, we officially became part of the U.S. National Germplasm System. And so our founding curator was Dr. Francis Z, and he was our curator until January of 2014. So I just want to kind of just give credit to the people who are responsible for the daily operations. And so these are kind of like the heartbeat or the things that keep everything going. And so we have Carol, who does our GRIN and GRIN Global orders, and so she processes all of our orders, keeps the database up to date. We have Claire Arakawa, who's our plant tissue culture technician. We have Amy Strauss, Russell Kai, and Jason Okamoto, who do the field and greenhouse. And then we also have some new additions, so we have some fresh blood. So we have Ryan Domingo, who's taking on a little bit more of the field, as well as getting trained on some of the molecular aspects. And we have Courtney Doherty, who's working with our joint project with Miami on cacao. And we also have Brandon, who's a student. Oops, not cacao. Okay, and we also are fortunate to have Dr. Lisa Keith, and she's our resident plant pathologist, and so she helps diagnose a lot of the diseases that we find on our crops. And so we'll go a little bit more into some of the crops as we go along. And so these are our 13 major crops that we're the primary repository for, including pineapple, breadfruit, starfruit, peach palm, peely nut, papaya, longan, lychee, macadamia, acerola, rambutan and pulasan, passion fruit, and guava. And so basically what we're going to do is I'm just going to kind of go over each of the crops and try to give you a little bit of highlights, a little bit of research that's being done on some of these crops. And so for our pineapple collection. Our pineapple collection is one of the larger collections. We have about 239 accessions, a lot of it from the pineapple breeding as well as some species. These are maintained in the greenhouse and in tissue culture. And so we're also working with Maria Genderek, who is with USDA ARS in Fort Collins, and we're developing a cryopreservation method for these. And so we hope to soon be able to have that additional resource for backing up our collection. Just to let you know, just to give you an idea of what the collection looks like, people got to experience it yesterday, a very hot greenhouse, and you have to be very careful with the eye protection, and labeling is very important, so we developed this potting system to a pot in a pot, where the bottom pot is, I guess, attached to the bottom of the bench. That way, when the plant grows, it's top heavy, and so we don't get plants falling over and get mislabeling, because that's a big problem and something that we want to avoid. We also work with the University of Hawaii, and so we work a lot with Dr. John Hu, and so he's diagnosed some of our or screened some of our collection for pineapple mealybug wilt virus. And so he's developed assays for that, and what we're doing now is we have the ones that have been tested positive kept separately, and we have Ryan who's doing research to try and be sure that our collection is free of the virus through tissue culture. Ken mentioned, and Dr. Kiley had mentioned, so breadfruit is an up-and-coming crop. We have 41 local accessions, but we do have a cooperative agreement with Diane Ragone at the National Tropical Botanical Garden on Kauai, and where she has an additional 210 selections. And so these are maintained in the field as well as in tissue culture. So we did have a problem with pigs, feral pigs in the collection. So one day they just decided that their bark looks really tasty. So we're going to come and we're going to try and, I don't know if they're going after insects or what. So they pretty much just kind of scraped a lot and kind of ate a lot of the bark around the trees. And so now we moved the collection into a protected area. So it's always good to have a backup, take-home message. Okay, we also have starfruit. We have 24 accessions maintained in the field, propagated by air layers. This is not one of your, Ken, this is not one of your crops, or,
Yeah, there's so many out there. We work more on marketing and value-added product development.
Okay. Are you doing things with starfruit? A lot of people yesterday got to actually see a lot of the peach palm operations and look at the heart of palm collection at Wailea Agriculture. And so this is a big crop. Most of the crops that we have, we also do have the spineless varieties, or we try to keep the spineless varieties. Peely nut. This is a crop popular in the Philippines. They often dry it and put like a candy around it. And so it's a nice buttery texture to the nut. And so this is one of the others. We also have papaya and papaya relatives. And so you can see that the diversity and the morphology on many of these species. So you have different types of fruits, flowers. And so here we have some Durilla, Jacarardia, and Vasconcellia. And so people have commented to us that these trees growing in the field kind of look like something out of Dr. Seuss. You know, this kind of wispy Dr. Seuss look. Our plant seed regeneration, because of papaya ring spot virus, we do a lot of, we used to do it in the Waikea Research Station before papaya ring spot virus, but since then, what we've had to do is move to a remote location where you're away from papaya production, so that you don't have the virus there. And so what we did is we tried looking at a way to grow the plants in the Waikea Research Center, because to drive over an hour to regenerate the seeds, it does take a little time. And so what we did is we looked to see if we could use the transgenic papaya to see if we could help our production system. And so but before we could do that, what we wanted to do was make sure that we're not actually getting contamination. And so the standard procedure is to bag the flowers before the flowers open, so that you do get self-pollination. Here you can see the fruits formed, and then we dry the seeds. And so what we developed is we developed a PCR set of primers where we were able to detect if we see any type of seed contamination, so pollen contamination in our seeds. And so we were able to detect it into like 1 to 2,000. So we're pretty sure that bagging it is good at eliminating any chance of getting any type of contamination. And so what we did is we did put tested it out where we surround a field of untransgenic or potentially germplasm material with the transgenic seeds. So the transgenic plants are in blue, and then you can see the rainbow or the red, and the red dots are the non-transgenic. So we tried different methods to see if you could keep the plants healthy, the non-transgenic plants healthy. So the thought process behind this is that if an aphid, which is a vector for the virus, lands on the transgenic plant, it'll clean its mouth parts, and so by the time it gets into and lands on the non-transgenic, it's clean. Okay, so. And so we grew this field. We did a 2-year study testing it and found that everything was clean. So, good and bad. So the aphid vectors, we did check the aphid vectors on yellow sticky traps to make sure that they were present in the field. So we knew we had the pathogen, the virus was present. We knew we had the insect vector. And so it seemed like this system may work. And so what we did is then we did it on a larger scale where your green plantings are your transgenic, and the orange, the blue, the orange, and the red are the non-transgenic. So basically now what we do is we just kind of do a border planting around our trees. And so basically we tried that. We had this test growing in this area of the field, and on this side we had no border planting, and then we did get virus. So it seems that this system is working, and so today we do have a little bit more plants growing in the Waikia station, and so far so good. Well, knock on wood. We also have a breeding project that we're doing to incorporate the resistance into a more freckle-free or plants, papaya seeds, that papaya fruits that do not have freckles on it. And so freckles is something that's just a blemish on the papaya. It doesn't harm any quality. It doesn't harm taste. It's just a physiological appearance. And so someone had suggested to me that maybe that you should just get Gwyneth Paltrow or somebody, you know, somebody with freckles to just promote the positive image of the freckles. but it seems the consumer kind of wants to go for the material coming from Brazil, which doesn't have freckles. So this is part of our one breeding objective. So we do have some crosses, and we're doing some back crosses to try to get the taste of the Hawaiian papaya with the freckle-free appearance. Okay, our other crop is longan, which Ken had said that's contributing to the massive growth in tropical fruit, so that's a positive. We do have 24 accessions maintained in the field, and we are getting these molecularly characterized with Dr. Daoping Zhang at Beltsville, ARS Beltsville. And so Lisa Keith, our pathologist, had done some work on some fungal diseases of longan and had isolated some of those these causal agents, including Pistillosiopsis, Phomopsis, and Colotactricum. So, okay, a potential reason for the big growth of longan is that we do have a method of producing off-season flowering. And so this is a really cool background story. So if you ever have like kids that you want to get into science and kind of tell them, you know, the power of observation. So this scientist in Taiwan had noticed that every time in Taiwan they had a a religious ceremony where they used fireworks at the temple, the longan tree at the temple would flower like 7 weeks later. And so it was kind of like, wow, that's pretty cool. And so what he did then is he got the ingredients of fireworks, put them at the base of the longan tree, and sure enough, 7 weeks later, it flowered. So then he went step by step to eliminate all the different ingredients in it, and then finally got isolated potassium chlorate. And so potassium chlorate is the mechanism that gets longan to flower. But unfortunately, it's also the explosive part of of the fireworks, so you just got to be a little bit careful. And so here we have the igami tree. You add the potassium chlorate, and sure enough, you get the start of flowering 6 weeks. By 12 weeks, everything is flowering, including even on the base itself. You'll see some panicles coming out of the actual base. And so then you harvest your fruit after 8 months. So I have the feeling that when I was doing this research and getting all that potassium chlorate, I must be on some kind of like list, but some kind of watch list, but it's a good thing. And so a lot of what we're doing in the past was trying to look at the mechanism of how this works. And so we were able to show that the sodium chloride, or the chlorate portion, is able to make it flower. And so doing things like, we're not recommending this, but we're just presenting this, but you can use bleach. So bleach is like sodium hypochlorite. You leave bleach in the sun, what happens is the hypochlorite will convert to chlorate. So when you pour that on the base of your tree, this is a way that homeowners have tried and successfully been able to get flowers on fruits off of their trees that hadn't fruited in like 10 years or something. Lychee, we also have about 94 local accessions. These are maintained in the field and are also being evaluated we're also looking at the collections in Mayagüez as well as Miami and Hilo to see if we can come up with some kind of core collection to make sure that the unique genotypes are being backed up. And so this is a project that was started by Francis, where we tried to see if we could get lychee production more synchronized in Hawaii. A lot of times we will get a hit or miss season, depending on how cold it gets. And so basically what we concluded was if you can synchronize your vegetative fleshes, and what you want to do is get it so that your fleshes are mature at the time we get our winter, because we do have a mild winter. So by January, February, what you want is you want mature fleshes on the tree, and then the tree is more receptive to that that flower induction signal. And so then you can get a little bit more uniform production. And so basically this is just showing the different pruning styles, and you can see the amount of production that we can get. And so basically the thought process was also at the same time to keep the foliage of the trees a little bit lower, so it makes it a lot easier to harvest. Because as the people who came on the tour yesterday can know, the lychee tree can get very, very tall. And so it's pretty much impossible to harvest the fruits on the top of the tree. And so pretty much those are just for the birds. So for macadamia nut, we have about 31 local accessions. And so just wanted to show you some of the interesting relatives of macadamia nut. And so this one has a very, very pretty purple fruit. The picture doesn't quite capture how pretty this fruit is. So it's a very nice ornamental. We also have the Hexbeachia, which is another relative. And so you can tell by the distinct flowers on the... And we also have acerola. These are maintained in the field and in greenhouses. Oh, Sorry, I was wondering what happened. Okay, and so, sorry, this is out of order, but basically, Lisa was able to identify Phytophthora tropicalis as the causal agent for macadamia nut quick decline, and so this is a big problem that was happening, and what was happening, it was basically getting a complex of different fungi. And so when you went into the field, you saw the dying trees. Basically, you see a lot of nectaria on the surface, a lot of ambrosia beetle frass, and some sap bleeding. But through Coast Botulus, they were able to show that it is Phytophthora tropicalis as a causal agent. And so we also have the rambutan and pulasan. And so pulasan is one of Ken's up-and-coming crops. And so Lisa also was able to isolate the causal agent for rambutan corky bark, which is a Dolabra species. So you actually see this is a very, very common problem in a lot of the orchards. And she also was able to isolate it from Langsan. Lisa? And we have the passion fruit as our collection. Unfortunately, a lot of our material was infected with Pauti virus, and so right now we're in the process of reclaiming some of our old material and reestablishing this crop. The guava, often used for the juices and jellies and things that you find around the market, as well as some of the fresh fruit for especially the white guavas are more of a Thai dessert type of guavas. So if you can keep them free of fruit flies, they're pretty awesome. So is this one of your, are you guys promoting white? There you go.
Spreading that
Nepalese
and all love all over the
place. There you go. Well, you can just advertise it as added protein, maybe.
Right.
So, okay, and then there's also a scab disease of guava caused by Pestilosiopsis. So, one of the projects that we are doing, so as I mentioned before, we are working, we work collaboratively very well with our other two repositories in Miami and Mayagüez. And so one of the project that we are actively doing is backing up the AVA collection from Miami. So a lot of you probably know of avocado laurel wilt. So laurel wilt was first discovered in Georgia in 2002 on the Red Bay. And the insect vector is the xyloborus. And the fungus is Raffaella lauricola. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing these correctly. And so the fungus kills and infects other members of the Lauraceae family, which is also includes avocado. And so you can see that it was detected in 2002 in Georgia, and by, 2015, it was in the USDA subtropical, or in Miami, near the collection. And so basically, in 2011. And so basically, they have about 269 avocado accessions at that time. They're currently free of the ambrosia beetle, but what they're doing, having to do is pretty much inject the fungicides into the trees, which is very laborious and difficult. So hopefully these are And hopefully these are still standing for after the hurricane. But. Okay. And so basically what we do is we have a process where they test the material in Miami. The material or the clean fine wood is then taken up to Fort Detrick in Maryland. In Maryland, they're grafted again, tested again to be sure they're free of the laurel welt. And then they're sent to Hilo. And where we put them into our quarantine house, we regraft them and then retest them before taking it out into the greenhouse and then again into the field. So it's a long process, and this is actually a voluntary process that we're doing. So this isn't mandated by anyone, but we just want to be sure that the material that we transport and bring into Hawaii is free of diseases. And so the exceptions are maintained as 5-gallon pots and also in the field. And so Wade was the person who initially did a lot of our testing. And in addition to laurel welt, we also test for avocado sunblotch viroid. So avocado sunblotch viroid is like the smallest viroid in the world, so it's very hardy. It's a very hard to detect. So you have to get molecular testing in order to test this. And so basically, Miami developed a very stringent protocol for testing it. And they were able to transfer this technology to us. And so thanks to them, we're able to do a lot of the avocado sunblotch screening in addition to the laurel welt. So far as I know of, we have no cases of avocado sunblotch viroid in Hawaii. Okay. Another project that we're working on is we're backing up the cacao collection from Puerto Rico. And so the back house that we have is in the greenhouse as well as the field. In addition, we're also working with Dr. Osman Gutierrez from Miami to do a little bit of his clonal selections and to test them out in Hawaii. And this research is being done in collaboration also with ARS in Puerto Rico to test out the same varieties, as well as HARC with Dr. Chifumi Nagai. So we, in Hawaii, we currently have, or the plan is to have field testings on the Big Island, Oahu, and Kauai. And our former curator, Dr. Z, was really good at looking at new potential crops for Hawaii. And so he had looked at tea, and so this project was started to grow different varieties of tea and see what the market would be. And so it is quite successful. And so we do have a lot of growers that have taken up this process. And now the University of Hawaii has taken it over and is doing more of the extension and outreach for this project. And as mentioned before, along with Kim Hummer, they looked at Ohelo, which is the vaccinium that's native to Hawaii, and it was grown as either an ornamental or for berry picking at elevations higher than. And I just want to say, thank you to all our collaborators. I can't emphasize how much we do a lot with our collaborators in ARS, as well as our university collaborators, our stakeholder collaborators, and other research institutions, like the University of Hawaii and HARC. So.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you. I think there are three.
Are those available to the public?
You can. Oh, Kim can.
We have the vaccinium collection, and President provided a start. So we have the three different ones: deep red, red buggy, nay, and Chilean. So you can either be in the meeting here or go online and bring your questions and the research.
Mm-hmm.
You're asking if we grow mangosteen? Yes, we do grow mangosteen.
But we don't have a collection in there.
No, a lot of the mangosteens are apomictic, so.
We have about 500 grafted mangosteens that are flourishing now to be released by next year or something. I'm curious to know whether your terracotta collection came in as seed or as a fungi.
We have a few that came in as. Oh no, they're grown as seeds. Yeah, there are a few that we maintain by cuttings.
Another reason I ask that question is there's an interesting Labarabacter, the same genus associated with citrus fruit. There was identified in the mountain papaya Bapaco. And there's a recent report that there was a papaya in California that also had this Labarabacter crescent, which is a cultural Labarabacter.
Well, that might be interesting. I know some of them we just do have a male, I think it's a male species, so some of those we do propagate by cuttings. They have growers that grow maybe about 5 years from planting. What happens is the trees will get really, really tall, and it'll be very difficult to harvest. So that's
me. Is there any way you can make them planting even more?
I guess you can do it a little bit with fertilizer, like if you give it a little bit more high phosphorus, then it'll tend to keep it a little shorter, but not dramatically. So it is difficult because as the flowers develop, the tree gets taller, so it's hard.
What I'm asking is, I have planted one papaya with 2002. It has several branches, like 10, 12, 15, now 15 years, it's producing a lot of the greenhouse.
Yeah, so what you'll do is you will see the lateral shoots come out of the papaya plants, and so you can either harvest some of those as cuttings, or you can use those as a lead. As long as you have a healthy root system, you can use that as your new lead. Kind of prune the top, use a new lead, and then you'll continue to get production. And it's nice. And then what I recently saw is that in Japan, they actually grow some of the sunset varieties almost like a vine. And so they do their greenhouse production, I think it's in Okinawa, where they pretty much keep the plants growing along the ground almost horizontally, and then they harvest the trees that way. So that's another, in Shikoku. Oh, have you seen it?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Okay. You guys have a good. Oh, okay. Yeah. Whoa. Wow. Okay. Actually, yeah, that is a big problem as well.
If there are no other questions, I'd like to thank our speakers and thank you for attending.